Here we are, Locked On NFL Thursday edition. Brian Peacock here alongside the scout Matt Williamson. We take you around the league daily here on the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can find Matt at Williamson NFL, and you can find this podcast and all the shows here on the network. Your team is covered in the NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL shows now, jumping on board on all of your favorite podcast apps. We've got some leftover Twitter questions. We spent a lot of time on just a few questions yesterday, and there's some interesting conversations I think we need to get into today. And of course, we will preview Thursday night football, Steelers at Browns. Matt, how are you on this fine Thursday?
I am well. It's kind of an odd Thursday for me because the Steelers are playing tonight, so I don't have my radio show. So a little more free time today than I'm used to.
Well, shoot. All right. Let's get it. Let's do like a 2-hour show then.
Okay. Right. All breaking down the Steelers.
Yeah. one quick note. We talked a lot about Kaepernick yesterday, and there's a team we didn't talk about. The Arizona Cardinals will have representatives at the Kaepernick workout. And actually, that's a really nice fit, and I didn't think about it.
That's a great one. I mean, you might know this one better than me, but assuming kneeling aside, I don't care about that right now. But I mean, would he be, as far as you know, with your Niner ties, would he be a good mentor? I would think yes. He seems like a smart guy.
I would think so. If he's, I mean, he knows that he's not going to get a job as a starter out of the gate. So he has to come in with a mindset of like, I'm going to back somebody up. And if you back somebody up, you know, you're going to compete. But at the same time, you've got to be able to help a young guy. And I think he saw how it should go when Alex Smith helped mentor him, even though he ended up taking Smith's job. And I think that was probably a huge learning lesson for Colin Kaepernick. And there's not talk about him being a bad teammate or anything like that. So, and he's a pretty quiet guy, so I don't think he would cause trouble or anything like that for sure. But the mentor part, I don't know, because now he's sort of an elder player. Back when he was with the 49ers, you know, 3 years ago, he was still in his late 20s and in his prime, kind of, as far as age goes, and you weren't really thinking about him mentoring somebody else. So that would be interesting, but I think he would be a nice fit there, and I think that would make sense. And he's been through a lot, so I'm sure he has some sage wisdom to share for a young quarterback.
Yeah, as I say, I mean, he's definitely had some life lessons that most athletes, quarterbacks have not gone through. And I got the impression when he was an active player that he was well-liked, at least by his teammates, and respected.
Yes. I want to stay in the NFC here. In the NFC here, because we got a question from Devo that we didn't get to yesterday that I think is a good one. He wants to know, where would you least rather play a playoff game in the NFC between New Orleans, Seattle, San Francisco, or Green Bay?
No offense, but San Francisco would be my first choice, just in terms of venues, weather. Ooh, those other three are at the worst in the list in the whole league to me. I mean, New Orleans is just so loud. I guess some of it, and I'm going to kind of skirt the question here a little bit, is depends what kind of team I have. You know, if I'm a... If I struggle in protection, the noise in New Orleans could be a real problem, obviously. If I'm able to be a power running team, I might be a little more willing or excited about going to Green Bay in the snow and presumably bad weather that time of year. Seattle's kind of the combination of both, though. You know, it's always wet and rainy, and that time of year is pretty nasty weather-wise, and it's loud, and they're smart fans, not that the other three are not. That's a good question. Do you have a preference there? Where would you want your Niners least to go?
Yeah, and I think you're right. Playing the Niners in their venue, that's probably the best weather in the NFL, maybe, at that point, because in the Bay Area, you just get the weird winter where it's, especially in the city of San Francisco, it's 65 degrees every day. The stadium's in Santa Clara, so it might be a little bit colder, but I mean, obviously, compared to those, the weather is going to be great. So New Orleans, the weather would be fine because you're in a dome, but it's loud. So New Orleans is the place you don't want to play in the regular season. I think I would rather play in a dome if I was built for speed than those other places in Seattle or Green Bay. Green Bay is interesting because it could be just completely freezing cold, or it could be a little bit warmer, but also snowy or something like that. So if you're built for that, like you said, I think that would be fun for me personally. I'd probably rather play in Green Bay than like a wet, loud Seahawks venue. But I would say the place I would rather play, if we're ranking them on best to worst, Niners, Saints. It's very close between Seattle and Green Bay, I think.
Yeah, Seattle to me is the worst of both worlds in terms of noise,
yes,
and weather. But weather, the home team has to play in the weather too.
You know? That's very true, right? The home team does, and it's not going to be, you know, it could be a little bit wet in Seattle, but it could also be a lot nicer than Green Bay.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're all tough. Philadelphia's tough too.
And honestly, above all that, it depends on the team you're playing against. I'd rather play an easier opponent in the toughest conditions than play a really good team in any of those places.
Yeah, I'd rather go to Chicago again with Mitch Trubisky in 50-mile-an-hour winds and snow than any of those ones. Right?
Exactly, exactly.
That's why New England's just the worst always.
Right, it is always the worst. Real quick, here's one on Eric Berry. I don't know if you have any information on Eric Berry, but we had a listener that wants to know, what's wrong with Eric Berry? How come no team has signed him yet?
I don't know, because his name's popped up a couple times. Oh, safety gets hurt, call Eric Berry. Or why is he still unsigned when free agency ended or the season started? And usually in these – well, okay, let's just analyze what he was on the field. He ain't what he used to be on the field. I mean, he's getting up in age. He's overcome a lot of medical things, obviously. He's not the impact player that he was in his prime and probably never will be. I mean, who knows? Maybe he signs to somebody and it's great. But my impression is he's a declining player. My hunch is maybe he doesn't agree with that assessment and wants to get paid like a star and nobody's going to do it. Or team doctors aren't real thrilled with signing him either. You know, you have to pass a physical. You got to get your stamp. And team doctors might not be approving that one.
That is a great point about how he views himself, and especially in the offseason, if teams are calling him, he probably had a number out there that was too high and teams weren't comfortable with that. Maybe the longer it goes, he'll realize, oh, shoot, okay, I've got to, you know, first prove I'm healthy, and then second, probably take a lot less than I was thinking to get signed by a team. And there's still time because, as we know, the attrition level in the NFL is severe. And there's going to be a team that needs a safety at some point. And if Eric Berry's ready, he could still get that call. But I think medical has probably the most to do with it. And it's probably information that we just don't have yet.
A team that comes to mind with them, though, is the Cowboys. You know, they will take a risk. They love the star power. They've been linked to Jamal Adams, Earl Thomas over the last couple of years. Why not sign him on a cheap deal? If he's up for a cheap deal, I mean, that's the thing, is he may not be up for a cheap deal.
Right.
Sign him for the rest of the year, show the league that he's healthy, and then he becomes a free agent again. You know, like that one, it'd have to be somewhat of a contender too.
Okay, we've got Thursday night football to preview, Steelers at Browns, and a few more really good questions to get to. This podcast is brought to you in part by Peloton. Can't find a workout that keeps you engaged? Peloton is an immersive cardio experience with real-time features that will always keep you coming back. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code LOCKED to get started.
Now is the time to get off the sidelines and get in the game with our buddies at MyBookie. MyBookie is the premier place to bet on all your favorite pro and college football action every weekend. They always have the most up-to-date lines and the most prop bets of any sports book on the planet. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and bet with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. Pick your locks for the week, put them together in one parlay bet, and when they all come through, the rewards will be gigantic. Tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain? MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back in the game. Here's the best part. If you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. That's right. If you put in $1,000, they'll give you $1,000. That's double your initial deposit, and you can use it on all your favorite picks. Use our promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON to double your cash. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win. You get paid.
I like this one, Matt. And I don't know if you've heard the conspiracy theories out there, Nathan wants to know if it's time for the Colts to part ways with Adam Vinatieri. And there's folks out there that I think jokingly mostly, but there's some seriousness to it, I think, as well, because people are out of their minds sometimes. But that Adam Vinatieri is purposely missing field goals and playing poorly so he will get cut by the Colts so he can sign with the Patriots. And it's a Belichick directive so he can go help them win a Super Bowl.
I mean, okay, let's unveil. I mean, I think he's too high integrity of a person and has too good of a reputation and a legacy to miss a field goal on purpose. Okay, I mean, so let's just throw that out there. I mean, but he's been really bad and he's really old. So I think he should hang it up and be done. But everyone that listens to this podcast knows 90% of what I come out of my mouth about the Patriots is utter praise, and my Steeler people hate that I love the Patriots. You know, come on, Williamson. And I think they deserve all the accolades. But I also believe that there's more behind-the-scenes stuff like that than with other teams. You know, like, it's a small one, but I basically know for a fact that LeGarrette Blount walked away in the middle of a game from the Steelers and signed with the Patriots the next day. And all the Steeler players basically were like, yeah, I mean, he did that on purpose. And, you know, I have been told, and I don't know this is a fact because this would be a much bigger story, that all of Antonio Brown's nonsense was to get to New England. And then he screwed it up when he got there, you know, as he often does, because he's bonkers. But I do think there's something to that, you know, how can I'm player X up in years. How can I best get myself to get to New England? Because that's my best chance for finally getting a ring. And most of it, don't get me wrong, is on the up and up. You sign Chris Long, you know, I mean, right. These guys at the end of their career that want to chip in and part-time players. And how many times have I said, what do you think is keeping Belichick up at night? It's got to be kicker. But to sign Vinatieri and feel better about your kicker situation, Adam would have to tell Bill, dude, I'm missing on purpose. Because he stinks.
Because yeah, he's worse than the carousel horrible they've had already. And it's not out of the realm of possibility to think that Vinatieri, kicking as bad as he has, would get cut by the Colts and potentially signed by the Patriots, but it being directed by Bill Belichick, that's a little far-fetched.
That's a little too Emperor Palpatine for me.
So there's a guy, his name is Minka Stan, so he's biased in this opinion, but he wants to know if Minka has become the best safety in the NFL.
I mean, there's a lot of talk, and it's not just Pittsburgh, about is Minka the defensive player of the year?
Yep.
So there's no other safeties getting thrown around in that conversation. This isn't exactly what he asked, but really for the last year or so, I've often said that I thought Jamal Adams and Derwin James would be this generation's Troy and Ed. It's the safety positions, but they're both more Troy than Ed, where Minka is Ed. I mean, I'm blown away with him more and more every time I watch him. His versatility coming out of Alabama was his calling card, but he has been so good in the deep middle. And that was one of his complaints with Miami was you're asking me to do too many things. They were asking him to be a linebacker and take on guards time and time again. And yeah, he can do it, but you stick him in the deep middle. He has had an Earl Thomas like effect where Nelson's always to his right. Hayden's always to his left. The defense isn't super complex on the back end, but he's just a total eraser of problems. The other 10 in front of him play more aggressive. He has remarkable range. He baits quarterbacks. He's always around the football. I'm not sure I'd take anybody over Minka right now. Maybe I'd take Derwin. I mean, he's a little bit out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. But there's no safety freakier than Derwin James. They're different styles, but if I'm starting a defense and I have zero people on my defense, I probably would take Derwin. And then the other guy that might be better than both of them right now, and I probably still lean that he is Kevin Byard in Tennessee, and doesn't get the credit he deserves, but superstar.
Right. No, that's a great call. Kevin Byard gets no credit for how amazing he is, and he deserves to be in that conversation with the other three guys, the young safeties in Adams and Derwin, and Minka is absolutely in that conversation now. It's impossible to ignore the impact he's made since he showed up with the Steelers, and there's something to it, and sometimes you can't see the safety all the time when you're watching broadcast angle of a game, so it helps if you see that all 22 angle and you see the end zone angle of what a safety is doing on every play. And there's something to it that it seems like the other team is throwing it to the same guy all the time. And I like the Ed Reed comparison there. He's more Ed than Troy, where the other guys are more Troy Polamalu, especially the way Jamal Adams plays is very Troy Polamalu-esque, the way he moves around and he'll time the snap and he can rush the passer and creates havoc near the line of scrimmage. But Minka is always around the ball. The other team throws him the ball and at some point you realize, oh, that's because of him and not because of the quarterback.
Yes. And the other thing that's happening here now, too, is, and this reminds me of Ed Reed a lot, is when he gets his hands on the ball, the other 10 Steelers think he's going to score. And they transition really well from defense to offense. Lakers fast break, you know what I mean? And the Ravens were exceptional at it and practiced it a lot that, okay, Ed's got it. He's going to take the house, you know, and everybody's going to find the block. And, you know, you start scoring on defense. Like, remember the Bucks teams that were great with, like, Brooks and Sapp yes. and Lynch and all those dudes? When Gruden got, they were a great defense. And Gruden got there, and all those guys will tell the story if you watch A Football Life, Warren Sapp or whatever. The Gruden start challenging a great defense. The taking the ball away isn't enough. You guys need to score to really be a great defense. And the Steelers are doing that, and it's a lot on Minka.
And we've got a lot more Steelers talk to get to here in segment number three, breaking down that Thursday night football game. Some more tweets first. Mantis, who has a question about the Falcons, and if they came up with a blueprint to beat the Saints, or if that was a fluke game for you, Matt.
I think it's a fluke game for me. I think that'll be the blip on the Saints' radar. When you look at their 16 games, you'll be like, that one just doesn't quite fit. And that happens with every team. You know what I mean? Like, your Niners, I don't think that's the Seattle situation, because if they play 10 times, it's probably 6-4. You know, I mean, it's competitive. I think if the Falcons and Saints play 10 times, it's 8-2 New Orleans. I think, and honestly, I didn't know this until recently. I didn't realize how big a rivalry that is and how much hatred there is between those cities, those teams, almost like Florida State, or, you know, I mean, like a real college like hatred. And I do think there's something to Atlanta looking at that in a lost season as their Super Bowl, playing their A game. Clearly they have a quarterback. Nothing went right for the Saints in that game. You know, Lattimore got hurt. A lot of things didn't go their way. But Atlanta was a better team. They rushed the passer extremely well, and I think that's something they can hang their hat on, that Grady Jarrett and company are people they've invested heavily in and are still good football players, even though the season's gone wrong. But if I'm a Saints fan, I'm not losing a ton of sleep over it.
It was interesting that you brought up the 49ers and the Seahawks there, because I think one of the factors that you see around the league, with especially with upsets too, is those teams that know each other really well, play each other twice a year, division opponents, and you can throw out the records a lot of times in those games. And we've also talked about how on this show that even though the Falcons were coming into last week at 1-7, they did not belong in the category talent-wise of the Dolphins and the Jets and Washington and, you know, Bengals and all those teams that have been really bad this year. So I think that's a perfect mix for an upset. Division opponents, those coaching staffs have been there a long time. They know each other really well. But one thing I will say is for a couple of teams in the NFC that might see the Saints in the playoffs, the Falcons run that cover three that came from Pete Carroll and Seattle. Seattle still runs that scheme. The 49ers have Robert Saleh, who coached in Seattle, and then under Dan Quinn. And they also run a little bit more skewed variation of that cover three now in San Francisco. So maybe that is a defense that gives Drew Brees a little bit more trouble, because he's got to make some stick throws that maybe he once made with ease that are maybe a little bit more difficult now.
Possibly. I would counter that by saying that Sean Payton and Brees is a beneficiary, are so good that when they get predictable coverages, they'll manipulate them. You know, like Ted Ginn had some drops in that game. Like, I just think that they'll scheme. If they know what kind of defense it is, no matter what, I think they will scheme. They know the counterpunch for it. I mean, there's a reason everyone doesn't run the same defense, because every defense has holes. And without question, they've seen that style of defense an awful lot. They know the holes in it. Can he exploit it like he once did? Maybe not. I'm going to steal it. I just want our listeners to hear this too, because I heard it on the Move the Sticks podcast this past week that Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks were talking about. And they were talking about, it's a good one. It was, you should check this out, because the podcast was, how were the Niners built and how were the Seahawks built? You know, because it was a big game and they really broke down from GM all the way down. And Bucky was with the Seahawks and said, the beauty of the Pete Carroll defense is it's very simplistic in that they're not going to, it's an execution-based defense. They don't throw a lot at you. When you add a Clowney, he can figure it out right away. But he said what makes them great is because so many defensive coordinators spend tons of practice time installing this blitz or this coverage or this robber or whatever. They spend practice time on fundamentals of football, you know, basic blocking, tackling, hand usage. And you see that. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me.
I think there's something to that, especially with the defensive mindset, is play sound, play fast, and the less you think, the better.
How about this? I mean, remember I told you I did that Steeler alumni thing on Saturday?
Oh, yeah.
You know, for the 79 Super Bowl team? It was very cool. But we sat down. They would just bring us old Steelers from that team. You know, there was Donnie Shell and Mr. Rooney sat down with us. And JT Thomas was one of the guys that sat down with us. And some of you might not know who he is. He was the corner opposite Mel Blount on those great defenses. And he was always on the right. Mel was always on the left. And we're just kind of talking on the air, and I couldn't believe this. And obviously it's a different time and it wouldn't happen exactly to this point, but they said when times were tough with the steel curtain defense, Chuck Knoll would get the whole defense together and say, we're only playing one defensive call. One. He's like, I played man. Everyone had their jobs, and obviously you had great players to pull that off, but it was, they basically put it on the scoreboard. We're playing cover one, you know, or whatever their base was. They tore the whole playbook apart and played one defense every snap, and everyone in the world knew it. Crazy. I mean, it's a different time, but it's the same philosophy of breaking it down and getting simplistic.
You know, I heard a similar story about the 85 Bears defense, and specifically, I think it was Adalius Thomas, who was talking about when he was coached by Singletary, that Mike Singletary didn't really know defensive scheme very well, and that he was blown away by that. And that's why maybe Singletary got a little bit too high in the ranks when he went past linebackers coach. And even as a linebackers coach, he was more about coaching up the players and intensity than he was about X's and O's, because he said in that 85 Bears defense, Singletary had the most simple job in the world for a linebacker. He was the middle linebacker. He had the running back on every play, and that was it. And he didn't have to think about all these other things. Yeah. So he could be intense, and his eyes were on the running back. If the running back ran the ball, he ran to the ball. If the running back was in, ran a pass route, he tried to cover the running back. So it was very simplistic. Yeah. And when it came to X's and O's, he's like, what? This guy can't teach me anything right now. And he was really blown away by that.
That's not surprising. And that 46 defense protected him extremely well to run and hit, and the great D-line in front of him, McMichael and those type of guys. And sort of similar to Lambert with Joe Green and those guys in front of him, you know, Ray Lewis with Saragusa and Adams in front of them too. You protect those guys and let them do their thing. Last note on that, because this is one that I really witnessed firsthand, was the 3 years that I was at Pitt, we were in the Big East and we played Miami when they were the U. I mean, Kellerman, I mean, they had just first round picks everywhere, and they did the same thing. I mean, they basically put up on the scoreboard, hey, we're running a stack 4-3 playing man on the outside, but we have Sean Taylor and, right. You know, like, we first round. We have 9 of 11 first-round picks on the defense, so yeah, best crazy. Of luck.
Yeah, go ahead and beat us.
Right.
Those teams were scary.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, I remember, real quick story. My first year in Cleveland, they just drafted Kellen Winslow Jr. right before I was there, and there was 1 year at Pitt. It was Larry's last year. We were like 11th in the country, and the last game of the season was going to be here for the Big East title. And it was snowing, and we thought, we got them right where we want them. You know, Miami will hate the snow, and they beat us like 100-0. And I went up to Winslow one of my first days there, and I'm like, so that last game coming to Pitt, I mean, were you guys worried? He's like, I don't even remember it. Like, it's like, I mean, he wasn't a real nice guy to begin with, right, as we found out later in life. But he was like, I don't even really know what you're talking about. Like, wow, that wasn't even a blip on their radar.
Who cares? Like, oh, yeah. Was there snow on the ground? I don't remember. I just remember killing people every week.
Right. I mean, looking back, maybe that's because he was not the nicest guy. But, you know.
Oh, that's funny. All right, let's talk Steelers-Browns Thursday Night Football. Use your football knowledge to prove you have what it takes at mybookie.ag, where they make it easy to play and even easier to get paid. Use promo code LOCKEDON and MyBookie will match 50% of your first deposit. We've got an AFC North battle. Well, the Browns aren't where we thought they would be in week 11. They just about can kiss their playoff hopes goodbye, but the Steelers have turned things around at 5-4 now and do have some hopes for the playoffs. In fact, if the season ended today, and I hate when I say that because I hate when I hear other people say that because the season obviously doesn't end today, but if it did, the Steelers would have the tiebreaker at 5-4 and have the sixth seed in the AFC playoffs. Yet the Browns at home are favored by 3, Matt, and I would put all of my money on the Steelers with 3 extra points with the way they're playing and the way the Browns are playing.
Yes, I am hitting that one heavy too with 3 in Steelers' favor. I mean, I've just seen too often the Browns don't beat the Steelers, and when we sat down and did in the draft room, and one of the first things Phil Savage said was, how can we beat the Steelers? You know, like, it's just ingrained in both organizations that I'm the big brother, you're the little brother. I certainly give the coaching edge to the Steelers, and I know this seems like a little thing, but when you're around a team as much as I am with Pittsburgh, you realize what playing on Thursday night is really like. Basically, the Steelers didn't practice all week. I mean, you can't install anything new. There's no time, and I think being a first-time head coach dealing with a super short week is challenging, where Tomlin does it, you know, twice a year. I mean, he's been doing it, he could do it in sleep. And being at home helps, but from a Steelers perspective, I worry that this is the Falcon-Saints situation that you talked about, where this is the Browns Super Bowl. Everyone's watching. They're backed into a corner. They have a lot of talent. You know, I mean, I know the Steelers' defense is really, really good, but so is Odell and Chubb, and we've seen, you know, they have star power that if they play like stars, can hang with anyone for a day. I mean, they beat the Ravens soundly. I just think that when I look through a Steelers perspective and I see teams with weak offensive lines, you know, even the Rams this past week, they're doomed. I mean, this pass rush is too good. Hayward, Dupree, Watt are all like in the top 10 of PFF's pass rushing grades, you know, like, you can deal with one or two, but not three. And the back end's taking the ball away. Their first-round picks all over the defense. And I think that defense travels. And in a low-scoring game, I have the Steelers 20-17.
I think Watt deserves more love and doesn't get talked about nationally as good as he is. T.J. Watt is an animal, and there's something about those Watt genes where he shows up in the fourth quarter, too. Like, he can close out games, which I've been impressed with. With TJ Watt, and that's going to be the fun side of the football to watch. That Browns offense, they've got firepower. Can they make some plays on a Steelers defense that's fantastic and gotten even better with all those first rounders? And now you add Minka to it. Can Baker Mayfield not throw the ball to Minka Fitzpatrick? On the other side of the ball, though, Matt, do the Steelers have enough there with quarterback Mason Rudolph? How has he come along in recent weeks and the running game? What's happening there on offense? What's the identity now?
Yeah, and it's all about defense with this team now. And they're one quick note just on the Cleveland side before then I'll get to that is I think Baker's a much better player than what he's shown this year, but I'm not sure that he values the football like a top player. I mean, he has so many fumbles and interceptions and batted passes. I'm expecting him to turn it over twice tonight, and that's just too hard. As for the Steeler offense, Rudolph's coming along. I mean, he's not Ben. He'll never be Ben. He's starting to throw the ball down the field more. People were very critical of him against the Colts because every pass was like basically at the line of scrimmage. And I do think there is some robotic nature to him, some too much conservativeness to him. But in that game, they dumped it to Jalen Samuels, and he got 6 or 7 yards 13 times. You know, like, if Brady would have done the exact same thing, we'd all be saying, wow, what a master. Because that's exactly what the Colts gave you. They didn't allow the downfield passing. So some of it's through a wrong perspective, you know, that was to me, was a very impressive game plan, even though it wasn't an aggressive one. Connor's healthy. I think he could have played on Sunday, but they kind of saved him for this. He was greatly missed. The line's still strong. The one thing that the Browns struggle with is slot receivers. So if Juju's ever going to, you know, make an impact, I think it's tonight. I just don't think the Browns are a very good matchup. Or the Steelers are a good matchup for Cleveland.
You mentioned protecting the football there with Baker Mayfield, and he's at this point in the NFL, if you're not throwing for 60%, he's at 59.9, then something's wrong, because there's so many easy throws that are baked into almost every offense now, and he takes chances. The 9-touchdown-to-12-interception ratio is awful, so there's definitely something to that, and the fumbles. So protecting the football is huge for Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns offense. Real quick, we only have about a minute left. What are the Vegas odds makers seeing here? What's that path to the Browns' victory in your mind?
I would imagine it's a lot of Nick Chubb. I think it's a lot of the mentality, like we talked about, of being at home. This is their Super Bowl. They still think they have a chance to go to the playoffs, although they probably can only lose one game at most in order to do that. Save your season. To the Browns' credit, they've played a lot of really, really good defenses, so maybe that offense is a little better than the numbers show. But real quick note on Mayfield, too, is one thing that was overlooked last year when everyone thought he was the second coming, he turned the ball over a ton during that stretch, too.
Right, and we're starting to see that that's maybe who he is,
right?
Which would be unfortunate, because you can't turn the ball over in the NFL. It's the number one thing that you see that correlates with wins and losses in this league. It should be a good one, though. I'm excited to see this. I want to see how for real that Steelers defense is going up against the Browns, and see if the Steelers can keep this run going. And maybe the Browns can still salvage their season. Maybe I've been a little bit over harsh on the Browns just because of that hype coming into the season. But it should be good. We'll break it all down tomorrow and make our picks for the rest of the weekend slate right here, Locked On NFL.